I'll give you guys my statistics before we get going. I was introduced to AA in 1997. I came in and out from 1997 to 2002. I got sober January 30th, 2002, at the age of 22. I've been sober 12 years, and I'm 35. I came in and out for a long time, and the only thing I did right was keep coming back. You know, and people would tell me I was really, really disruptive in meetings. And people would tell me keep coming back, and I don't even think they meant it. They would say it. You know when you've said something a little off and people say keep coming back, kind of like sarcastically? I think that's how they talk to me a lot of the time. But, I moved around a lot as a child. My dad's family's from the Bay Area. They're from San Francisco. And my mom's dad's from Los Angeles. And I was born in Los Angeles while my parents were in graduate school. At about the age of four, we moved to Vermont. We moved back to the Bay Area from Los Angeles. At four, I moved to Vermont. At five, we moved to Montreal for 6 years. I lived in Montreal from the ages of like 5 to 11 or 12. And it was really hard at the time because at the time there was no immersion classes and I got thrown right into French school. And I failed all my classes until I could speak French. Another thing, during that time period, they were really against anyone English speaking. You know, there was a whole controversy in the city about English speaking signs in the windows and whatnot. So everyone, you know, all the kids hated me off the bat. But up until, you know, my early teens, I always moved. I was always the new kid. You know, whatever city or state or country we lived, I lived in a bunch of different houses. So by the time I hit my early teens, I was really shy, I was really timid, I was really insecure. And by the time I found alcohol, it was just kind of like a whole, you know, deal changer for me. And it's pretty interesting. My alcoholism, looking back now, seeing the progression of it, and you know, it definitely progressed in a way that so fast. You know, I did well all the way through school. You know, in junior high school, I had a 4.0, and I got a scholarship to study in Belgium my junior year in high school. And I wanted to go study in a French speaking country from having lived in Montreal. And as soon as I got there, the teachers went on strike. And over there, they didn't have any substitute teachers. So for that whole year, I just went to the bar. I'd get up at 8, but instead of going to school, I'd go to the bar, and I'd drink beer, and I'd play pool all day. And I did that for the year. And coming back to the States, it was, you know, I couldn't go back to you know, just being a high school student. It was too hard. After a whole year of drinking every day. And then also at the end of that year, I realized too that if I took a drink in the morning, the hangover would go away. Then it was a done deal, you know. So I came back to the States, and I kept drinking, and I started having consequences. And you know, at first it wasn't too big of a deal, but it just kept getting worse. And you know, my drinking's, I feel like it's not that exciting. It's just, you know, I drank and things got worse. I kept drinking, things kept getting worse. I tried a whole bunch of different things to stop drinking that didn't work, and I kept drinking. Coming back to the States, my folks sent me to treatment up here, Thunder Road, some of you guys know it, on 40th in Oakland. So the guy I sent to treatment is 17, and I decided that I wasn't ready for the program, and I didn't want AA. So I left Thunder Road, and I didn't go back home, and I just got an apartment in Berkeley with some friends, and then my drinking kind of took off. But in that, what that, you know, that my time in Thunder Road is, it planted the seed, you know. And from 17 till I got sober at 22, I came in and out of AA. You know, and when I say I came in and out, you know, I got 6 months twice, and I had a whole box of chips, you know, of 30-day chips, 60-day chips, 90-day chips. And at different times during that period, I wanted sobriety, and other times I didn't. And it was really hard being so young. You know, a lot of times I would tell myself, well, you know, it was just a phase, or, you know, I'm too young to be an alcoholic. But things got progressively worse and progressively worse. And I was, you know, I was someone that was very disruptive in meetings. You know, I would go to meetings drunk. I would fall over in meetings. I would knock chairs over. I'd get up and scream and swear at meetings. One meeting I was drunk in, I didn't like the meeting. I didn't want to be there. I got up, started screaming and swearing at everybody, and I hit a doctor with 20 years sober. And I didn't hit him hard, but I hit him. And he followed me outside of the room. And he said, are you hungry? Do you need any food? And I said, no. And he said, do you have a place to stay tonight? Do you need somewhere to stay? And I said, no, I'm fine. And he said, well, do you have money? Do you need any money? And I said, okay, yeah. And he gave me $20. And this wasn't in the Bay Area. This was in a small town. This was in Davis. And he gave me $20, and I left the meeting. But the thing was, at that time in Davis, there was only two fellowships. There was the 6 o'clock in the morning fellowship and the 7 o'clock at night fellowship. You know, and that was just an example of the love that I've been shown in these rooms. But I took that money and I left, you know, and I kept drinking for 3 or 4 days, and then I wanted to get sober again. And I went back to that meeting because I was, you know, I didn't want to go to the 6 in the morning meeting. And I went back with my head really, really low, you know, but everyone welcomed me and everyone showed me love. You know, I kept drinking. Some of my consequences, you know, in 1999, I got 3 DUIs in 46 days. I blew really high on all of them. I blew 2-2, 3-1, and 2-0. On the second one that I blew 3-1, I was driving into oncoming traffic on the wrong side of the divider. It was really late at night, though, and well, I'll just say no one was coming at me, thank God. But you know, and I'm blessed, you know, because it's true. I've met folks in the room here who only drink a couple glasses of wine in the evening that have killed people, you know, driving. You know, and that, what a more horrible thing than to take someone's life just for, you know, myself, you know, being stupid. But, you know, I kept drinking. My life was like sort of kind of manageable. I could kind of keep a job sometimes. Sometimes I couldn't. But it just kept getting worse, you know. There came a point where I stopped being able to keep a job. There became a point where I stopped being able to keep a place, and I was, you know, just sleeping in my car. Then eventually the day came where, you know, I didn't have the car. And, you know, it was just a list of, like, detoxes and hospitals and treatment centers. And it was nothing very glamorous. And going to jail for stupid stuff, you know, like getting drunk, starting a fight, and getting beat up. You know, that was just, you know what my life had become. And when I finally got sober in 2002, I don't know that there was any big dramatic thing. You know, I had showed up at my dad's doorstep, you know, maybe a couple months before that, weighing, you know, 150 pounds, maybe 100 less than 150 pounds with a bag of stuff. And I hadn't talked to him in a year or two, and I asked him if I could stay there. And he let me stay there. And I had just been, you know, drinking and homeless for like the last like year and a half before that. And I was just tired, you know. And then my dad and I, you know, we got in some sort of argument, and he told me he was going to put me out. And then I just knew that I just felt so tired that I just couldn't do it anymore. So I just started going to meetings again. I just remembered meetings, and I just started going again. And this was in 2002 in Berkeley and Oakland, where I got sober. And it was a pretty amazing time. Like, when I look back, there was about 30 or 40 of us, all between 15 and our early 20s, that went to meetings together. And there's a few of them here today. And we went to Monday Night Young People, and we went to Wild Bunch, and we went to College Bay, and we all did everything together. And sometimes it was really annoying, and it felt like high school, and, you know, there was a lot of drama. But it was great, because I had this community, you know, and we were all doing it, and we were all in it together. And, you know, the early sobriety was hard for me. You know, everyone's experience is different, but for me, my first year sober was incredibly difficult. I didn't have a lot of friends, and I came in very angry and, you know, not very open or trusting of people. And I put a really heavy reliance on my sponsor. And I didn't really have too many friends that first year, you know, but I would call my sponsor. I'd call this poor man like 7 times a day, you know. And I look back now, and I'm very grateful for his presence in my life at the time. You know, and I was thinking about, you know, being sober a little bit now, I forget a lot of this stuff like when I was first new. And I was trying to remember it today. And I remember when I was really new, everything, you know, I would wake up and it was like a heart attack. You know, like every time I woke up, it was just like so much anxiety. And I remember not being able to sleep. And I would just lay in bed for hours not being able to sleep. And I talked to a medical doctor during that time period. And a medical doctor at one point told me, you know, it takes 2 years for, you know, we're going to put all these drugs and alcohol into our body. And it goes everywhere, you know, it goes in our bones and it goes in our muscles. And he told me it takes 2 years for all of that stuff to, like, work itself out of your body, you know. And so for early sobriety, it was really important for me, you know, to exercise. And I drank a ton of water and to try to, like, eat right. And, you know, that's been, I'll get to it a little bit later, but that's been a big part of my sobriety also, is just like, you know, the first year or two, it's all about not drinking, you know, like free pass, you know, you want to, you know, smoke 10 packs of cigarettes a day, go out and have sex with everyone, you know, whatever. But after a little bit, it becomes about living, you know, and it becomes about like our spiritual connection, and it becomes about our thinking. And for me, in order to feel well, you know, spiritually, and then also to feel well, you know, mentally, it was important for me to, like, treat my body right, you know, and to exercise in sobriety and to eat right. And for me, that's been a big part of my sobriety. One thing, I kind of see sobriety as, you know, this is our chance. This is our chance to figure out what it is that makes me happy, and then to pursue that. You know, for growing up, I was always an athlete. You know, I was a long distance runner in high school. And I remember, you know, just drinking, when I was drinking, I would drink gin and vodka around the clock. And I'd wake up shaking, and I'd wake up too sick to do anything. And I'd look out the window and see people, like, jogging around the park. And I would just think, like, oh, I wish I could, that looks so nice, just being able to, like, go out in the park and to not be sick, you know? And part of, you know, my sobriety now that I'm sober is, like, figuring out what it is that makes me happy and pursuing it. You know, I think we all have this incredible drive and passion. And I think it's evident from how we drink, you know. Like, I've pursued drinking at such tremendous costs, you know, and just kept after it and kept after it. And when I got sober, you know, it takes a lot of drive to, you know, to keep that up time and time again. My life has changed so much in the last 12 years. It's crazy. Like, you know, my views on the steps, my relationships with others, my career, everything. It's completely different. You know, my sponsor told me, you know, asked me when I first got sober what I would want out of life if I were to never drink again. And he told me, he said, whatever your answer is, you know, you're probably going to sell yourself short. And, you know, it was true. I talk a little bit about the steps. I went through the steps in my first year with my first sponsor, and that was very, you know, it was, I kind of look at the steps like going, like now having the experience of having done them, I kind of look at it like going to the dentist. It's something that I don't always want to do, but I know I'll probably feel better after I do it. And My views on the steps have kind of changed over the years too, you know. For example, the ninth step. When I first got to the ninth step, my view on the ninth step was kind of like, well, if it comes, some amends I didn't want to do. I was like, well, I'm just not going to do some of them. Then my view kind of progressed to, well, if it comes between me and drinking, then I guess I'll do the amends. And then it kind of evolved to, well, before I pass in this world, like, I would like to have done my best at righting my wrongs, you know, so I can have a clean, you know, good relationship with my God before I pass. Some of the other steps, the fourth step changed a lot for me, you know. In the beginning of the fourth step, you know, I don't know if you guys have heard the expression, it's like peeling layers of an onion, but that was definitely the experience for me. You know, when I first started doing them, it, you know, the fourth step sounded something like, I hate this person, I hate that person, you know. And then as I started, you know, doing more and more of them, I started to get to know myself better, you know, and I started seeing like the reasons behind some of the ways that I act. And at the time, it was really difficult because, you know, I'm doing this work, and I'm like, wow, I think I'm getting better, but I just keep realizing that I'm that much sicker. But that was the whole process for me of getting healthier and getting better. Some of the other steps that have been of particular importance to me is the 10th step. I have a hard time sometimes remembering what I ate for lunch yesterday or what I did a week ago. And the same thing was with my 10th step. And at a certain point in my sobriety, I started doing a written 10th step. And I started writing down every night, you know, where I was resentful, self-centered, selfish. And what I got to learn about myself is that I was a pretty honest person. Not perfect, you know, I'm not 100% honest. But I was really selfish. Or I'm sorry, I was really fearful and resentful. You know, every night, you know, I just would do these 10 steps and just realize that I was just like, you know, overwhelmed with these irrational fears. And doing that really helped me get a better grip on, you know, on where I was at in my sobriety, because I could write, you know, maybe I was, you know, say I'm resentful at Bob, you know, and, you know, I've been resentful at him. I could have been resentful at him a week, but I would just forget. But then writing it down every night, I'm like, oh, wow, well, I just wrote about the same thing like 3 times this week. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's something that I need to do more work on, or maybe it's something that, you know, I need to pay more attention to. But the first 2 years of my sobriety, I really focused on myself. I almost didn't date at all. I spent that whole time doing the steps, working with a sponsor, and working with others. And I attribute my sobriety today to that foundation that I built in the beginning. You know, and the reason being is after that first 2 years, after those first 2 years, you know, it's hard. My life got a little bit better, you know, and sometimes it's hard to remember all the basics that we learn here. You know, I've always gone to meetings, I've always done the steps, and I've always had a sponsor. But sometimes I didn't use the best judgment, you know. Around 4 years, so I lived in San Francisco. I know some of you from the city. I lived in San Francisco for 8 of my years sober, and 4 here in the East Bay. So when I was around 2 years sober, I moved to San Francisco, and a year or so after that, maybe a year or two, I started working in bars. And you know, AA is different in every city. You know, I've done AA in cities where you don't go into a bar, period. And then I, you know, 10 years ago in San Francisco, or 8 years ago or whatever in San Francisco AA, it wouldn't be uncommon to go into a meeting and there'd be like 6 bartenders there. You know, and I worked in bars for, I would say, 3 to 4 years of my sobriety. Because it was San Francisco, I had a day job, San Francisco's expensive. And, you know, I didn't drink, you know, but had I to do it again, I would not have worked in the bars, and I don't think I had any business being there. I know a ton of folks that were in the program that worked in bars, and the majority of them have all relapsed. You know, at 2 years sober also, I realized that AA would only take me so far spiritually, and it gave me an introduction to a spiritual life. And in order for me to continue to grow spiritually, I realized that I needed to look outside of AA. And I started going back to Mass. So 2 years sober, I started attending Mass, and I started doing Bible study, and I started volunteering with my church. You know, I had a real hard time talking about that in San Francisco for a long time. because, you know, a lot of folks, you know, would come to meetings and they, you know, they would make fun of organized religion at group level or make disparaging comments. And while I appreciate that, you know, everyone shares their experience, that what makes AA great, people would put down the religion just for the sake of putting it down. So I was always very, you know, I felt ashamed to, like, talk about my experience with religion in meetings. until a few years later. And then after that, I just started sharing my experience, you know, and it was not very common to have young people's, you know, to meet other young people's that went to Mass. But that was my experience, and that was how I was able to grow spiritually. And that definitely helped me be more at peace through my sobriety. So this time in the bar that I was at, you know, 2 years sober, I'm doing well, I have a strong foundation, I feel close to my God, I'm growing. You know, and then I started working in these bars, and it took me so far away from the rooms that I didn't even realize it. You know, I still went to meetings, but I didn't really talk to folks at the meetings. You know, I would come to the meeting, listen to the meeting, and then I'd go, you know. And the majority of my friends, you know, were from the bar or from going out. And, you know, it wasn't like this, glum, depressing bar. You know, it was fun bars in the city. I knew everyone from going out and going to shows with them. And they were all, you know, good people. But it took me so far away from my relationship with God, and I didn't even realize it. You know, I was, I had this moment of clarity one day working in the bar. You know, I'd been there a couple years, and, you know, I bar backed and I did the door. And every now and then there'd be fights, you know, and I get into these fights, you know, working the door. I just had this moment of clarity one day. I was like, you know, I'm 5 years sober, 6 years sober, whatever. I'm fighting people on Polk Street at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, what am I doing? You know? And already having felt close to God and gone to church, and then being on this other extreme where I'm like not talking to folks at my folks in the meeting, working this bar, getting into fights, it kind of made me realize, you know, that I had gotten so distracted from the rooms and I hadn't even realized it. And that was an important thing for me to realize. And, you know, my sponsor that I had at the time, I would talk to him about it. And I kind of knew something didn't feel right. You know, and I would talk to my sponsor. I'd say, I don't know if I'm supposed to be working here. You know, and he'd say, well, you know, you're there for legitimate purpose. You know, you need the paycheck. You're there. You're doing your job. I wouldn't worry too much about it. But for me, I knew it was wrong. And I think after we've been sober a little bit, well, at least for me, you know, I'm able to take my temperature. I have like this internal thermometer, you know, and I kind of know. You know, sometimes I'll call my sponsor and ask him, or sometimes I'll call a close friend and ask them something. But a lot of times I already know the answer. And I already know, you know, if something's not feeling right, or if I'm doing something that I don't think I'm okay with, you know? But during that time in the city, you know, I had a good life. You know, I went to meetings, you know, I started kickboxing. I kickboxed for several years. I did Muay Thai. And kind of my point in saying that was what I mentioned earlier when about just like pursuing the stuff we want to do, you know? Like if I was drinking, I would have never got it together to go do this, you know, to do any of that, you know? And in sobriety, I thought, oh, okay, wow, you know, that sounds cool. I'd like to go, you know, try Muay Thai, you know? And I got to train and do it, and I had a couple amateur fights, you know? Well, unofficial amateur fights. But... Well, I'm not talking about the street fights, but, you know, and it was a good time. You know, I worked in the city, I worked in the shoe store, and lots of AA people would come by and say hi to me, and, you know, I felt a part of this community. And then somewhere in my late 27, 28, I realized, well, you know, I kind of, you know, I want a career, you know, I want to have a family, and I decided to go back to construction. You know, and I went back and I started doing union construction and I was pouring concrete. And in 2009, you know, when things started, you know, going bad, I got laid off. And during this time, I was thinking, well, you know, what should I do now that I'm getting laid off? And I decided to go back to school full time. So I went back to school full time and I graduated a few months ago with a civil engineering degree. And I did really well in school. I graduated magna cum laude, and I graduated the top 3% of all the engineering disciplines. And I work as a design engineer now. And, you know, just another, you know, for me, I just, you know, nothing is, you know, the sky's the limit. Like, nothing's, you know, impossible. Like, anything that we want to do or set our minds to is possible. And it's all a gift of of this rooms, you know? I went from, like, working in a bar, getting in fights at 2 o'clock in the morning, to going back to school and graduating at the top of my class with the engineering degree. And it's all because of, you know, it's all because of the meetings, and it's because of the rooms. Other stuff that I like to talk about is working with others. Working with others has been an important part of my sobriety. One way that I've been able to stay connected to the program is with teleservice. You know, when I first got sober, I told my sponsor that I was having a hard time with service commitments. You know, I'd go and then my schedule would change or this or that. He said, well, why don't you try teleservice? So I've been doing teleservice now for, it's got to be like 8 or 9 or 10 years. And I've done it, you know, I've had the phone, you know, from 6 to 10 at night. I've had it from like 10 at night to 6 in the morning. I've had it 6 in the morning to 10. And I've gotten all sorts of, you know, different calls and crazy calls and wacky calls. But, you know, it's really, it's an easy way, I think, for us to give back. And it's been an easy way for me to feel connected to the rooms. You know, my first, like, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I always had a lot of sponsees. You know, I always had like 5 sponsees. And since then, I haven't had any. And I don't really know why that is, you know, because I feel too like in my first 5 years, you know, I was totally crazy, you know, and I was changing so much. And I used to hear it a lot, you know, when I first came in. I don't hear it so much anymore, but they used to say, yeah, if you're going to kill yourself, don't kill yourself in the first 5 years because you'll be killing the wrong person. And, you know, that's been my experience. Like, I changed so much my first 5 years. I'm sure part of it's being in my, you know, was being in my 20s. But just my experience from, you know, in the 12 years is so dramatically different, you know. And I've got to do so many amazing things. I've gotten to travel in sobriety. I've been to Costa Rica, Thailand, Cambodia, Philippines, Indonesia, France, Denmark. I've gotten to go to all sorts of different meetings. I've been to meetings in Vegas where everyone was just chain smoking. I've been to sunrise meetings in Hawaii. I've gotten to go to meetings in Indonesia and Thailand. Most